Ryan Dixon and Rory Boylan host Tape to Tape, the hockey podcast by Sportsnet.
Okay, those of you that have been thrown, have you done it now? 2-minute bench fighter for the Flyers for delay of the game. 5:14 minutes, 58 seconds. Way to go.
We pulled the game away and they weren't interested in playing anymore. And so, you know, we ended up on the power play for the last 7 or 8 minutes. And, you know, it wasn't good for the game, plain and simple. You know, we're on national television. I don't think it displays our game very well.
Corey Perry, here he comes. A self-pass. His shot blocked. Rebound Raquel. 2 saves by Rene.
At the end of the day, Detroit Red Wings had their best game of the series. They came ready to play at the Joe. And until you lose the game at home, you're really not in trouble in a series. And right now, they haven't lost at home.
The Red Wings have defeated the Tampa Bay Lightning 2-0 in Game 3.
Welcome to Tape to Tape, T2T. I'm Ryan Dixon. I am a writer for Sportsnet Magazine and Sportsnet.ca. Sitting to my left, making sure his heel is still touching the blue line, it is NHL senior producer for Sportsnet.ca, Rory Boylan.
I don't think I picked it up there. Can we get a review? Yeah. Can we get a review? Let's pause the podcast.
Frame by frame. Well, we are going to go frame by frame, so to speak, over some of the early happenings of the playoffs. We're, of course, going to talk a little about those offside reviews, maybe some ideas for how we might get some more goals in the game or what other people are thinking, because there is that sense out there that scoring should be happening more frequently. You've also already got a sample of Del Barber and the No Regret Skis on the opener there. We're going to talk to Del about his sort of countrified hockey tracks, hockey covers, songs you'd recognize, but with a cool little twist that is coming up in the next block. But yeah, we're gonna start, I think, with that bit of a gong show in Philly. Man, leave it to a Philly PA announcer to come down with the snark. I love it. You idiots have done it. That's what he really wanted to say. Man, not really a good scene in the late stages of Game 3 in a series which Washington went up 3-0 in Philly.
You know, it was What they were littering the ice with were bracelets that the fans were given before the game as part of the Ed Snyder ceremony. So it was...
Adds a whole nother level there, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. This owner, great owner, brought expansion NHL hockey to the city in 1967. You know, Mr. Flyer, the face of the franchise, and, you know, recently passed away, and you honor him in your first home game in the playoffs this season, and Philly does what Philly does best.
I was going to say, if there's any place, we all know the default booing Santa Claus reference. Yeah.
I mean, it wasn't good, though. I mean, it was crazy because it was a 2-1 game. Philadelphia scored the first goal of the game less than a minute in. It was 2-1 Washington at the start of the third period. You couldn't have predicted it would have gone off the rails the way it did. It started with the Bellemare hit from behind, really. I think it was 3-1 Washington at that point, if I'm not mistaken. I think that was about 12 minutes into the period. And he, you know, had that brutal hit from behind on Orlov, gets a 5-minute major and a game misconduct for it. Big scrum ensues. 2 more Flyers. Ryan White and Radko Gudas get 10-minute misconducts. And then that's the first instance when the bracelet started to get thrown on the ice. They didn't get the penalty at that point. They got their first warning at that point. And then I think it was 2 minutes later they got the delay of game, and it just kind of unraveled like crazy. And Barry Trotz was right. It's like all of a sudden Philadelphia didn't want to play that game anymore. They come out sure. So spirited. They were hammering Washington off the bat for that first period. They were all over them. They were out shooting them, out chancing them and everything. And the way it turned in that third period was, yeah, you couldn't have seen that coming. Yeah, like Trotz said, they weren't interested anymore.
And obviously when you zoom out on that series as a whole, some things have turned on some crazy goals on Steve Mason. I mean, fair to say he's having the worst playoff of anyone currently still playing hockey.
Yeah, and yeah, I mean, he was such a good story for them this year. You know, former Calder winner, lost his career in Columbus, recaptures it in Philadelphia, and he comes into the playoffs. And kind of Philadelphia was this popular upset pick because of the way that they were coming into the playoffs and the fact that Steve Mason was playing good hockey. And then that goal that he let in from the other end of the ice being labeled as possibly the worst goal that ever allowed.
No bad bounce.
No bad bounce. And he owned up to it, too. He just said, look, I was just trying to put it in the corner, and I missed
it. And I missed. Like, that is a goal for missing from 6 inches.
Yeah, and they talked about this on the Hockey Night in Canada broadcast about his focus, and they brought up a couple instances in the season. There was one where he was, you know, fiddling with his mask while the puck was still being passed around in his own end, and which led to a goal, and this is just another, you know, there was no focus there. Yeah, you're trying to put it in the corner, but you got to just don't count your eggs before they hatch. Just stop it first. Yeah, you're in no rush there.
No. And from the other side in that series, when you mentioned Philly being a popular upset pick because they were hot coming in, it's also because they're playing the Capitals and everyone's like, oh, well, we'll see. And Washington obviously cooled a bit down the stretch. But, man, now looking to make short work of a first-round opponent, you have to like where the Capitals are sitting big picture.
Yeah, no problem turning it back on. I think we talked about this on the podcast last week. We both picked Washington, right?
Yes. Oh, yeah. I got them going all the way.
Yeah, same. To the final, anyway. I just didn't see any way this team was going to have a problem turning it back on because they've got, A, the star power, but they've got, B, the
support
experience.
Staff.
And I don't care if you say it's not a factor, but I think it does play somewhat of a role to have guys who know what it takes to win 16 games in the playoffs. It's a marathon to get through that.
Sure.
And not often do you see teams who have no experience go on these significant runs. They're getting the great goal thing. Alex Ovechkin is now the all-time leading playoff scorer in Washington Capitals history.
Without ever having played a third-round game.
Yeah. And he's been, you know, as advertised, he's been Alex Ovechkin. Did you see the goal last night? He's kind of, I think he was getting a stick from the bench, but it's like he was hiding behind the linesman at the blue line. Yeah. So sneaky. But they're just overmatching Philadelphia everywhere, and they look unstoppable right now. I like how Tampa Bay's been playing. They've been looking better than I thought. I picked them to get upset in the first round. They've been looking better than I thought. Florida's had a tougher time with the New York Islanders than I thought. Pittsburgh is having a little bit of a tough go there with the Rangers, who are kind of grinding them down. And it's funny that they lose their first game with Evgeny Malkin back in the lineup, who they seem to have a tougher time with when he is playing. So I'm now looking at all these teams who I thought might do well or have been playing better than expected, and I just don't see them being able to beat Washington. Washington just looks better. They look deeper. They look stronger.
Lots of good things to think about the Caps. If you can't wait for the pod, by the way, to get our thoughts, you can always follow Rory at Rory Boylan, myself at Dixon on Sports, and of course you can hit the podcast on sportsnet.ca or in iTunes. One of the talking points has definitely been the offside challenges, reversals. There's been, I think, two or three. We're going to use that as a jumping off point to talk about what people think should be a constant conversation in hockey, how to get more goals. But what's your feeling on the offsides that we're seeing?
Get rid of it.
Can't even get the question out.
Oh, it's just
counter to the spirit of the rule. Is that your thought? That just, you know what, if someone's a millimeter offside.
Yeah. I mean, so to me, it's exactly like last year in Major League Baseball. I don't know if they've changed it this year where your foot pops off the bag. It's probably the same rule. And it's so cheap where, you slide into second base and you're clearly there, but as you're popping back up to stand on the base, your foot pops off by a millimeter and you can catch that on the instant replay. And because the guy's glove was on your pant leg, then, you're out. And it's, that's not really what this is for. And I just don't care if the guy is offside by the tiniest of margins or if his foot is picked up. That's where they should start. At least get rid of that. I don't care if your foot's off the ice. If your foot's off the ice and it's just a little bit behind the line, fine, you're offside. But if the linesman is off by that smallest of margin, I don't care if the call's wrong and the guy goes in and scores a goal. And I certainly don't care if they enter the zone that way and they're controlling the play in the zone for 30 or 40 seconds and then score a goal.
Right.
And then you go back and review it. And,
between, sure.
Yeah, it's so inconsequential to what's happened there.
So one of the more radical theories on how to increase scoring has been, what about eliminating offsides?
Yeah.
Which I know sounds crazy, and I know you're going to say is crazy.
Yeah.
But then I think to myself, I mean, I'm a, you know, more or less a conservative when it comes to these things. I don't pound the table for bigger nets. Mm-hmm. But I would be curious to know just how much it changes things. I mean, I guess you could just take the challenge away and be done with it. It's tough to know how much you could put the toothpaste back in the tube there, though, because now are we breaking it down on TV and seeing, you know, all right, well, he was a toenail offside. Like, if the viewer knows, is it still sort of compromising things?
Last night's overtime goal with LA San Jose, the first thing that was being talked about right after the goal was scored was, oh,
challenge,
was it
offside? Challenge. It's totally back to foot and increase days. But yeah, I think with the offsides, it's not like someone's going to leave a forward down by the opposing goaltender.
If you get rid of offsides.
Yeah.
No.
I really don't know how much it would affect the way the game is played, which then maybe you could say, well, there's, you know, then it doesn't give you the boost you're necessarily looking for. But for something that sounds entirely radical, the more I thought about it, the more I was like, you know what? It's not that crazy.
I'm not crazy about these wild changes like that. Cause I think, and I think we've talked about it on the podcast before, I think it's just going to come back around it in some degree because of something, whether it's coaching, like a new system that comes in.
You think you get the hockey equivalent of the offensive coordinator who just, like, the West Coast offense hits hockey or something like that?
Yeah, that's how hockey history and history in general works. It's all cyclical. I refuse to believe that if we just leave it how it is, that scoring is just going to keep dropping and dropping and dropping. I mean, what do we get down to? An average of 1.1 goals? Like, I just don't, you know, that's an extreme, but I don't see it happening that way. Things are changing in the game. You're seeing Adam Oates training, teaching a lot of players.
Because there's never been more of an emphasis on skills than skating too, right? It's kind of contradictory that now the minimum standard to get in the league is so much higher than it's ever been.
Yes.
And you can be a little speedster and play in a third and fourth line. You couldn't do that before.
Yeah.
So yes, now will it all get harnessed, for lack of a better way of putting it, for good as opposed to, you know, for bad, if you want to cast defenses that, because these small speedy guys can really defend too. And everyone does defend hard.
And this extreme speediness in the NHL, where every team has speed and every player needs to have speed, it's still a relatively new thing for it to be this pronounced in the league. This isn't something that happened right out of the 04-05 lockout. After that lockout, you still had guys like Hatchers in the league.
Not for long.
But, I mean, you had a team like the Boston Bruins winning the Cup who weren't really...
They had some guys, but they were
more bruisers. I think it was when Chicago won the Cup and were starting to be a consistently dangerous team, and Vancouver was a little bit like that too, where teams started to copy that, and now pretty much every team.
Dallas, certainly.
I mean, even Toronto at the end of the season when they started using their younger guys, they were noticeably faster. So it's still a relatively new thing, 5, maybe 6 years or so, it's starting to take over. So you're still in a stage, I think, where it's like, okay, we have all this speed, we have this new stuff. What do we do with it? How do we take advantage of it? Everybody has it, so how do we get better? How do we take better advantage of it than anybody else? And I think that's just figuring out an offensive system to complement it. I don't think you need the draft. I'm more on the side of thinning the post and angling the post than doing something crazy like getting rid of offsides. I just don't think it's necessary, and it immediately brings up memories of the 2005-2006 season, which had a crazy amount of goals compared to the two seasons before because of power plays, but it just felt so cheap because everything was being scored with the man advantage, and it's like, okay, yeah, we got a lot of goals, but this isn't good.
And this is where you get into wondering, all right, so to some degree, hockey would like to mimic what's happened in football and what's happened in basketball, whereby certainly in football, the scoring has gone way up. I'm not actually sure how much scoring has gone up in basketball, but the way the game is played is so different. And those two leagues got there in different ways, right? Football has essentially, you know, the way they have come down with stiff penalties. You can't touch the quarterback. Like, they've done everything they can do to encourage bombing it down the field, throw it as much as possible. You know, you're seeing new touchdown records set fairly consistently each season. So an outside force comes in and says, we're going to try and manipulate things to play this way. You know, does hockey have to do that, whether it's big time with no offside or smaller with shaving goalposts? Or, as you said, you get a coach like as happened in basketball when Mike D'Antoni starts coaching the Phoenix Suns. They got Rick Nash. They got Steve Nash back there running the offense, spacing the floor, taking three-pointers. And lo and behold, along comes this amazing team led by this amazing player in the Golden State Warriors and Steph Curry. Yeah. Now everyone spaces the floor. Exactly. Everyone shoots threes, and it just kind of happened organically. So it'll be interesting to see if hockey kind of has to go the way of, well, let's do everything we can to create the situation where the league goes that way, or if it could be like basketball where it's just like, you know, a team comes along that just kind of perfects. And as you said, a coach who the opposite of Jacques Lemaire, for lack of a better way of putting it, when he came to Minnesota or New Jersey, I guess, originally. And someone just says, you know what, I'm going to figure out how to harness all the speed and skill for good and try and focus on scoring instead of preventing.
I think it's a bit of both too in hockey, because in terms of those physicality rules in the NFL, I mean, you do have those headshot rules that are kind of new in the NHL, and they're still refining those. And that's,
there are stiffer penalties now as there is in the NFL.
Yeah. And as we saw in the Florida, New York Islanders game 3, you can't hip check anybody anymore either. You get a clipping call for that. You know, it's getting harder to legally hit a guy, especially on the rush. Right. It's hard to get him with a clean check. And I think they're going to continue to kind of refine that rule and make it tougher and tougher and tougher to hit guys. Or, you know, you change the rule to eventually you just can't hit a guy in the head, period. Whatever the situation is, you can't do that. And it's just going to, I think that's going to keep getting tightened. And, you know, you're going to have the other rules like goaltenders' equipment kind of slimming down and all that. And that, with a mixture of what I think is going to come eventually, is, and I don't think it's going to be one coach. I think it's going to be a mixture of a couple different coaches, a couple different ideas that come in and learn how to take advantage of the speed and the skill of the guys. Everybody's got skill. You can't have just the plodding one-dimensional guys anymore. You need kind of a well-rounded game. Well, and I think we'll get more third and fourth lines that have offensive capabilities.
Well, one team we don't often associate or historically haven't with scoring that is off to just a fine start is the Nashville Predators. And I wrote about this before they played game one against the Ducks. You know, we obviously long associate Nashville with a stifling strong D core and Pekka Rinne being, you know, a mountain of strength in there. But, you know, Rinne, since his knee injury last January, not the season, but the season before, he had come back from some hip surgeries, was having a great year, went out, his save percentage fell off at the last half of last year, and then he really wasn't great. 909 save percentage against the Blackhawks in the first round. Nashville, which actually has had a little more heartbreak than you realize in the playoffs, loses a triple overtime opener, I think, or double overtime opener to Chicago, loses a triple overtime game in the series as well. Goes out. This year, Rinne been very meh again, and you went into the series thinking that's actually the one question mark around Nashville. They've got Ryan Johansson. They still have a great defense. Philip Forsberg, James Neal, 30-goal guys this year. Now you got Ribeiro Fisher slotting in as 2-3 guys. That's not bad on your center depth chart. What are they going to get from the guy who used to be Mr. Automatic? And lo and behold, I think he's 9-3-1 through two games, and all of a sudden the Preds are sitting pretty going home.
Yeah, I wanted to make that upset pick. I really wanted to pick Nashville, and the whole reason I didn't is because I didn't believe in Pekka Rinne. I just thought he wasn't going to be able to do a good enough job against that Anaheim offense that was kind of finding itself, and here we are. I feel kind of stupid for not picking that upset right now. But, I mean, yeah, Nashville has looked really good. Like you say, James Neal, Philip Forsberg is
legit sniper at this point.
Yeah, definitely. Neal just, I mean, he scored some big goals. He's got a ton of shots in that series, too. He's got this bad rep around him because you're just waiting for the moment when he does something incredibly dumb that puts Nashville in a bad situation, shorthanded, in a spot where they can't be giving up a goal.
Right.
But yeah, they just kind of, they have depth. They have the goal. They've
always fit the mold of a team that should do all right in the playoffs too, right? I mean, aside from the fact they haven't been able, they haven't had that number one center, and that's a huge thing. But
you look at
the tight ways that they, the tight game that they play, like, you kind of wonder why Nashville hasn't made a few runs to the conference final until you realize, well, they would have to play like cup caliber Detroit or cup caliber Chicago teams very early on.
Yeah, and you have to wonder if Pecorine had a good year, which he definitely, what was his save percentage, like 906 or 909 or something
about
like that.
About that, yeah.
If he had a good year, this team could have won that division or, you know, been in the running for it at least. I remember when early in the season on this podcast, we were talking about how awesome that division was right from whoever was in first place at the time, probably Dallas, down to even Winnipeg was included in that. But Nashville was actually might have been first place when we were talking about that. They were awesome right off the start, or at the start of the season. And then Pecorine kind of doesn't do a good enough job holding the fort, and they fall. And if he has an average season for an NHL starter,
sure.
I think we're talking about Nashville completely differently. I don't think they would have been an upset pick. I think you're looking at them winning that division or finishing second and being a legit, I mean, they probably are a legit Stanley Cup contender at this point, but they're one of those teams. There's so many teams in the Western Conference right now who are darn good, but they haven't won yet. They've had a lot of disappointments in the past, so you don't really believe in them.
That's a good segue to the All-California series. I mean,
the best series of the first round.
Producer Sam was in here saying San Jose, which wins two games to start the series on the road, had to win game three.
Should have.
But you do kind of feel that way. Well, that makes it worse, right? Should have. Lose it in overtime.
There are a few chances in that game where they just miss the outside. Like, it gets through quicker. It hits quicker, and he doesn't know where it is, and it just squeezes by the net, or he falls back on it and freezes it, but he still doesn't know where the puck is. And it's like, these are the chances that need to go in for San Jose that they just can't. They just don't have that luck.
Yeah.
You know, and LA does seem to have that luck. Oh my goodness. They only won the first two games instead of the first three this time, but it reminds me so much of the 2014 series where San Jose was outplaying LA, but they're just not getting the bounces, and then LA comes and wins a crazy game in overtime.
Don't you think there's part of the Sharks that's like, at least we don't have to answer the 3-0 questions.
Oh,
you know,
God.
At least we don't have to be like, well,
yeah,
you know, a couple years ago, you got, you know.
Although at the same time, you don't have as big of a lead, and now that you've lost that game at home, it's like, oh no, not
now
again.
Now we gotta win. It's the thing that endlessly delights me about the playoffs is how quickly the pressure shifts, right? Like, what's better than going out on the road? You win two games there. You're feeling like a million. Mm-hmm. Then you come home. You just happen to lose a hockey game. All that happens is you lose a hockey game. You lose game three. Now you're playing game four going, well, if we don't win tonight, it's a 2 out of 3 and it's 2 in their building.
Yeah.
We don't like that, you know? And we've just gone from, wow, 2 on the road to start the series to, well, man, we better win tonight or we're kind of in a heap of trouble.
They have been the better team in that series, though. That's the thing. You know what I thought was interesting about the overtime goal is when we talk about analytics and we read about analytics and all this, the idea that things like size and strength being real factors, like analytics kind of writes that stuff off and saying, well, you're just making this up. Like, this isn't a real factor. It's nothing that you can really quantify. And yet that overtime goal, when these teams are so close, I mean, that overtime goal was the result of Dustin Brown throwing a huge check on small, speedy Donskoy, and then Pearson, I believe it was, gets the puck and goes in and scores on a 2-on-1, gets a great scoring chance. When teams are this close, you can definitely look at things like San Jose's power play is much better than LA's, but I don't think you're going to get, I don't think one team in a playoff series is going to get a lot more power play chances than another. Generally not how it works in the playoffs. So I think when teams are this evenly matched, stuff like that is a factor for sure. And we saw it last night. It's not the driving factor to why they win a 7-game series, but it's definitely an important element in key moments in series like that where, yeah, you can't build a team of just Dustin Browns, but you need Dustin Browns on your team.
Well, and one team that, I mean, I wrote about this in Sportsnet magazine, the sort of two approaches, right? You've got the two golden templates in Chicago and LA And there's certainly more Chicago disciples at this point. Like, if you're, as you referenced the Leafs, if you're building a team from scratch at this point, you're probably going, we're painting in broad strokes. I know the teams all have different elements, but you're going that speed and skill route versus the big, strong, heavy, lean on you route. Mm-hmm. And the series that best exemplifies the contrast in the NHL is Chicago-St. Louis, because St. Louis is a pretty direct disciple of LA, right?
Yep.
And
yep.
Haven't been able to get over the hump, and, you know, up 2-1 after two games, maybe this is the year that St. Louis can find a way to lean enough on the Chicago Blackhawks that they break.
I picked them.
I picked them too.
Yeah, it's been a really good series. It's kind of gone how you would expect close series to. I don't think there hasn't seemed to be as many kind of offensive chances in that series as there has been in the LA San Jose series.
Right.
So it's not as good in my opinion, but it's been such a close series. Vladimir Tarasenko and Jaden Schwartz. These are the type of players that St. Louis didn't have before.
Playoff monster.
Yeah.
Like 11 and 15, I think, goals, something like that.
Yeah. And so this is the element that St. Louis didn't have before, where, yeah, they're more of an LA style team, but the reason why they weren't winning before is because they didn't have the guys who were going to score the goals for you. They could grind you down and win or lose a 1-0.
But they need 50 shots to get a goal.
Yeah, you need a 3-4 goal game every now and again, and they weren't really getting that. And now that they have Tarasenko and Schwartz, these are the difference makers. These are the guys who differentiate this year's St. Louis Blues team from the ones that kind of came before. And they've had a little playoff experience after last year as well, losing in the first round to Minnesota, which is crazy. So that's the difference, and I think that's going to continue to be a difference in this series. I think that's why I picked St. Louis to win it, because this is an element, an important element that they didn't have before that they now have, and it's already three games in. It's proving to be key difference in this game, this series.
Before we get musical with Del Barber, let's just quickly check in with our brackets, see how smart or dumb we look after most series are either through three games or about to be very shortly. So if we go in the East, I think we both had the Panthers.
Yes. I had them in five.
Had them in five. I might have had them in five, too. I have to say, I don't have it in front of me. I can't remember. But either way.
Can I just say, I'm not upset at all about the three games and four nights thing. That's a ridiculous complaint.
Yeah,
it just kind of feels like everybody's dealing with it. Move on.
Okay, so we'll move on to Detroit, Tampa. You had the Wings. I had Tampa, so I'm looking all right there.
It's interesting now with Mrazek and Net for the Detroit Red Wings. Don't forget, we were talking very recently about him being a kind of outsider Vezina candidate.
Oh, yeah, February.
Yeah, and then he completely lost at the end of the season. Gets a shutout in his first start in the playoffs. If he can recapture that.
Has three shutouts in seven playoff games, I think.
Yeah.
I'm going to throw that out there. I better look it up, but I think that's the case. So we also have, both of us did not have any doubts about the Capitals going through, so we're looking pretty good there.
Yeah.
And then the last Eastern Conference series is one that hasn't played game three yet. We both like, I think you had Pitt in five. I think I had him in seven.
Yeah. Seven. Man, New York is just, they grind you so hard. You can't rule them out.
Mrazek, just to jump in. Yes, three shutouts in eight career playoff games, career playoff save percentage, 9.31.
So that could be a difference in that series. And I don't think the Triplets line is going to keep scoring as crazy as they have been. I am doubting Pittsburgh a little bit more than I was when I picked it. I still think they'll move on, though. But it's interesting that they average scoring more goals without Evgeny Malkin in the lineup than they do with him in the lineup. It's a weird thing. But, I mean, they need to score goals. If they're going to go in and the score is going to be 2-1 or it's going to go to overtime, New York's...
That's a Ranger game.
Yep.
So I had the Kings. You got the Sharks. Hard to say. I don't know who looks better there, even though the Sharks are up 2-1.
Even if the Sharks were up 3-0, I still don't think we would know who looks better.
St. Louis up on Chicago. We both had the Blues going through that one. Mm-hmm. And, of course, neither one of us had the Canes to follow through on our Nashville affection. We both picked Anaheim. Mm-hmm. Definitely looks like they're in trouble. But then again, like we said, things can turn fast if they can win a game.
Turned it around once already this year.
Yeah, exactly. They just need to do the micro version of that. Mm-hmm. And the final West series, who am I forgetting out West?
The forgetful series.
Oh, that's funny. Yeah, it is a little hard to get too juiced up for this one, isn't it? Dallas up on mini.
I don't know what it is. I can't.
Maybe it's just too much good stuff other places. It's tough to keep up.
I'm just ready for Dallas to win that series, move on, and play a team that will be interesting.
Sure.
I like some players on that Minnesota team. I like Charlie Coyle a lot. I like Jason Zucker a lot. I don't know what it is about that team. I can't get into that series.
Just can't get behind the Wild, I'll tell
Although I will say that was an impressive win for them Monday night.
They
had been really struggling to score in that series. I don't think a forward had scored for them in the first two games. And then they went off and, they fell behind early and they came back and did what they needed to do. And they haven't, you're not in trouble in a series until you lose at home.
It's true. One guy who is loosely based in the Minnesota region. Well, I don't know. Sort of like that. Minnesota, Manitoba, Winnipeg. It's all big and cold. Now, I'm never one to slag on Winnipeg. In fact, I go to bat for the city whenever I can because I've spent some time in Manitoba, and I'll definitely back the art scene there and the hockey scene for sure in Manitoba. One guy who has fused those two things is Del Barber. He is going to drop by the Tape to Tape podcast and talk a little bit about his new album, his love of hockey, growing up in Winnipeg. We're going to talk to Del Barber when T2T returns. Stick around for the next block.
And when this team wins the Stanley Cup, it's coming back to Winnipeg!
Welcome back to Tape to Tape. Joining us on the line now, the good Prairie Boy, it is Del Barber from Del Barber and the No Regretskis. Regretskis, my God. Easy for me to say. Del, why'd you have to make it such a tongue twister?
Just for guys like you. It's a little gift on the platter.
Just to trip up everyone on a microphone. Yeah. Well, Del, though I tripped over it, it is a fantastic name. Why don't we just start by you giving us a little sense of what the Regretskis and yourself are all about musically?
We are a band that sings hockey songs, and that's it. When the No Regretskis play, it's only to play hockey songs. So there's never been a band like this before, as far as I could tell. we're going to run out of material one of these years, but a very special occasion-based band. You know, we just put out a record, our first record, maybe our last, who knows? But it's all about hockey. It's all about our beautiful game, so it's basic concept.
And as anyone listening to some of the tracks on the pod today would know, obviously it's a bit of a country infused theme.
Yeah, it's a little country. There's some twang for sure, and there's some punk in there. You know, there's some energy in that on that record. I'm proud we were able to kind of dance across some of those different genres.
And let's get your plug in right now. It is The Puck Drops here, and it's available anywhere anyone looks at this point, right?
Yeah. Oh yeah. Easy to get.
I love the hockey theme take. I love all the takes of these. We were listening to some of them last week, and I'm a big fan. It was awesome.
Cool,
I want to ask you, no Canadian teams in the playoffs. I know you're a big Winnipeg Jets fan. Do you have a rooting interest? Are you able to get into them?
You know, I've the first week here, I've been a little bitter about it. And now I'm sort of picking up my general playoff my general interest again. You know, it just took me a week to sort of get over the fact that you know, the Canadian teams are gone. So I'm starting to think about this, the New York Islander series right now.
Mm.
I like watching Tavares skate, always have. I really want him to be a Jet. I don't think it'll ever happen. there's never any exciting trades anymore. So, you know,
Well, I'm a Florida Panthers fan, so I don't think I can be a fan anymore.
Oh, all right. But, yeah, I love watching the St. Louis Blues in the playoffs, man.
Yeah.
They're fiery, and it makes me believe in playoff hockey. So catching some of that, it kind of made me excited about it, and so I'm going to start focusing on what's going on a bit more closely and forgetting about the stupid Capitals. And, you know, I'm tired of Ovechkin, to be honest.
Minnesota's playing Dallas. Do you have any sympathy for those fans playing against the city who stole their team, since you're from Winnipeg, seeing a team leave?
Series. You know, I'm gonna hope for the North on that one for sure. You know.
So I'm guessing you are a lifelong Jets fan then, or at least when location allowed for it.
Yeah, well, I was at the last home game before they left, and my parents let me drain my savings account. I was 12 or something. And drain my savings account was my university fund for the Save the Jets campaign. Who knows where all that money went, but it was like $400. It wasn't much. We gave it all to the Jets, hoping we could keep that team here. And so needless to say, when they came back, I was one of those, you know, grown men wearing plaid, crying in the streets of Winnipeg, you know, celebrating this huge kind of coup against what we looked at, you know, the big bad NHL that took away our game. And it was... It felt like a really big victory for the little guy, you know.
What's your favorite, man? I know this is a two-part question, I guess, before and after. What's your favorite part, what's your favorite memory of the Jets, the original Jets, and your favorite moment as a fan of the new team, too?
So the first time I ever saw Timu Solani, was remarkable. He was the fastest guy I'd ever seen on the ice. And I think it was my second ever NHL game. My dad got tickets from his factory. They had a ticket draw, and we couldn't afford many NHL tickets, so when we got to go, it was a huge deal, you know. My sister had got to go. She's older, so she got to go to a couple games before I did, and he got me these tickets, and we went, and I saw Timu skate, and I was like, holy smokes, this is a real thing. And all of a sudden, all of those kind of characters and facial expressions that you get to experience when you watch live hockey just became so much more palpable, you know. And I really enjoy watching live hockey if I can, just for that side of the game. You know, you always get to watch the play behind the scenes, you know. It's watching the plays develop instead of having to watch the puck is key, I think, to being a hockey fan. And that's the same with the new Jets. You know, I love watching Dustin Byfuglien behind the scenes. I think he's a character. He's always giving somebody hell. And so I watch him, and you know, as funny as he is, as much of an oaf as he can be sometimes, I really like the character, and sometimes even the lightheartedness that he brings to the game, you know. I wish there was a bit more of that.
So you obviously grew up with a passion for music, playing music. Did you play hockey as well, and when did you realize maybe you were more into playing music and watching hockey than vice versa?
I'm still going to make the NHL. I'm 32. I figure I have a couple more skates and I'll be in my prime here and start calling the scouts up and see if I can get a walk on in Calgary maybe, or, you know, somewhere that they need somebody like me.
What, a checker or what kind of player?
Oh, I'm like a, you know, a neutral ice player. You know, I don't want to get in the corners. I don't want to get hurt, you know.
A true musician's approach to the game.
No, I played a really serious hockey in all through my youth and through high school, and played double A and a little bit of triple A, and then quit that and played high school hockey. That was the thing that all of us did. And the triple A program in Winnipeg kind of got bombed out because all of these guys were starting to play high school hockey and getting to play in front of their friends and their big crowds every night. And it was really exciting, you know, and I definitely miss that type of atmosphere. And it's not the same as big shows playing music. There's something different about it. And I think it's that electricity that comes from big hits and sort of the gritty side of the game. You don't get that grit in anything else but sports with contact. And I'm a big fan of the gritty hockey that of yesteryear, and kind of wax about how it gets sanitized, you know, and I might be wrong about that. And, you know, we got to worry about concussions and all these things, but I do really think that if artists, you know, knew that that they could bleed for their art, they might treat it a bit differently, you know?
Yeah. Excuse me. Fair point. No doubt. I'll also blow your mind a little bit, Del. I used to cover junior hockey, triple A hockey in Manitoba. So I can throw names or team names out there like the Minnesota Wild, the Interlake. Oh, I forget what that was, but I was based in Portage La Prairie. So I was
Terriers.
Yeah, I was probably on the beat not long after you hung up your skates on the Bantam and Midget circuit.
No way. That's cool. So, yeah, it's good. It's good hockey country out here. For
it
sure.
Is.
And I live right around in the parkland of Manitoba, which is just across the line. It's like Kelly Bookberger. It's Langenberg, Saskatchewan. We got Cody McLeod out of Binscarth, Manitoba. Of course, Theo Fleury out of Russell, Manitoba. And the list goes on and on. There's just so many family connections here. You know, Theo's dad still watches games at the rink in Russell. And I don't know, it's a pretty cool place to live.
I definitely, absolutely. I mean, in terms of where hockey is just most in the blood, I know, you know, because there's long-standing classic teams in Toronto and Montreal, that's where people always think the Capitals are. But in terms of just the guy walking down the street, and like I said, hockey just being part of everyday life at all levels, midget, high school, whatever, I do think the Prairies is the real heartland.
Oh, cool. I take that as a massive compliment. Thank you.
Well, last one for you. So many hockey-themed songs out there. Is there one that stands out above all the others as your favorite or maybe your favorite to play?
I mean, I love playing Stompin' Tom. I think it's just a great song, and it's the perfect anthem, and I hope that it keeps getting played in those rinks, you know, forever. I every time I get to play anything from him, I feel exquisitely Canadian, you know, and it's hard to get a sense of national identity, and one of those things that does that is definitely hockey, so. I'm proud to have this record out there.
Well, I don't think we're in any danger of not hearing the hockey song anytime soon in rinks across Canada. And certainly as long as Del Barber and the No Regretskis are doing their thing as well. They just had a new album drop, and it has drop in the title. It is The Puck Drops Here. Del, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you. Take care.
That was Del Barber of the No Regretskis. And that's all we have for you today on a special music-themed edition of Tape to Tape. But make sure you come back next week. You know, the playoffs, they go on for a while, so we'll still be deep in that. The first round mayhem will be coming right down to the wire. So make sure you're back for more Glass Rattlin' hockey action on Tape to Tape.
There, we're on the air, it's hockey night tonight. The whistle blows and the tension grows and the puck goes down the ice. The goalie jumps and the players bump and the fans all go insane. Someone roars, Bobby scores, it's a good old hockey game. Oh, the good old hockey game is the best game you can name. The best game you can name. Skates and flash and the home team trails behind. And they grab the puck and go bursting up and they're down across the line. They storm the crease like bumblebees. They travel like a burning flame. See them slide the puck inside. It's a 1-1 hockey game. Oh, the good old hockey game is the best game you can name. The best game you can name is a good old hockey game. Players face off on the rink, and the Stanley Cup is all filled up. All the ones that win the drink with a final flick of a hockey stick and one gigantic scream. The puck is in, the home team wins. It's the good old hockey game. Oh, the good old hockey game.
Has been Tape to Tape, the hockey podcast by Sportsnet.